Well, welcome back to Coast to Coast, now approaching 525 stations strong across North America and XM Satellite as well, plus you Streamlink members playing with your computers. In a moment, we're going to be talking about alternative energy. As a matter of fact, you know, in California, I just left there. Gasoline is still outrageously high. In St. Louis, yeah, it's pretty nominal. But still, when are we going to get some alternative fuel? In a moment, David Bloom joins us, expert on alternative fuel, and activist, actress Daryl Hannah, next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we've got two special guests for you this hour. David Bloom, of course, regular at Coast to Coast, recently receiving the American Corn Growers Association Truth and Agricultural Journalism Award, and he's currently teaching people across the country how we can develop clean and truly renewable food and energy production programs. Hey, Dave, how are ya?
Hey, I'm glad to be here, George.
Always a pleasure, my friend. And actress Daryl Hannah, of course, you know a lot of her films. One of course, Splash, with Ron Howard's film, Herbert Ross's Steel Magnolias. Daryl also, though, a very keen environmentalist, and she's got her own weekly video blog on sustainable solutions. Here's Daryl Hannah. Hi, Daryl.
Hello.
Welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
You know, I did not know until a few years ago that you truly were an environmentalist. How did you get interested in all this? I assume for years you've been doing this.
It's just common sense, I guess. You know, provide your own energy, your own food, your own water. It's a common sense situation.
You know, still, all these years, we continue talking about alternative energy and food sources. Just a handful of people are doing it, Daryl.
I know. It's crazy. You'd think that the first thing that people would want to do, especially if they can afford it, is provide their own energy and their own fuel and their own food.
Absolutely.
It's one of the most sort of basic things that one could imagine. And it's so easy to do, and we have all the tools that we need to do it right now. And as David will tell you, there are many ways that we can do it with biofuels and sustainable, renewable, regenerative energy, like solar power, wind power, alcohol fuel, biofuels of all kinds, from waste.
Absolutely. And David, I'm glad to see this award that you got from the American Corn Growers Association. You deserve it. I mean, you've been working at this for a long time.
Well, I have been working at it a long time, but, you know, it's my pleasure to defend the farmers of this country against just the heaps of, well, not even manure that are, piled on top of farmers in this country who are keeping us fed, and at the same time, being bled dry by oil companies and their, you know, related chemical companies. And, you know, the American corn growers have looked at the whole program we talk about in terms of family farms being able to make food and fuel. And they say, oh, my God, this is where we have to go if we don't want to be slaves to Monsanto and to the oil companies. So I'm really pleased to work with them.
David, we've talked for years about let's go to alternative fuels. Let's get away of this dependence from foreign oil. A couple of the automobile companies are talking about electric cars very soon. But do you really see all this happening?
Well, I'll tell you, Daryl has worked with biodiesel in many parts of the world and has seen that blossom everywhere over the last few years. And in my work, I've gone to places like Brazil, where in a very short period of time, only about 7 or 8 years, the country of Brazil has shifted to run now 85% of their cars on straight alcohol. You know, this is not E85, this is E100 or 100% alcohol. And at this point in Brazil, you can't even sell a gasoline-only car because it has no resale value. Alcohol is half the price of gasoline in Brazil, and they basically got really mad about being victimized by the oil companies and decided not to put up with it anymore, a place that I'm finding myself nowadays.
And Daryl, you're darn serious about what you're doing. You got arrested, and where was that? It was in West Virginia, trying to help a small village, right?
Unfortunately, I've gotten arrested twice. One was to try to protect the South Central Farm, which was the largest urban farm in the United States, and the other time was in West Virginia to protest mountaintop removal. which is a practice that is outrageous, where we're actually blowing off the tops of mountains to get at the coal seams below rather than mining them. And it's a completely unnecessary practice. It's only a very small percentage of the coal removal procedure, and nevertheless, it's one of the most destructive procedures that we have, and once again, it's completely unnecessary. So those are the two times that I found myself, under arrest.
Do you find the villagers supportive of what you do when you're out there, or do you think you're out there all by yourself?
The most of the people that I was arrested with were people from that community.
They were.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, you know, George, there's a real parallel here between what farmers go through and what the miners go through. And the parallel is, in both cases, corporations are really allergic to labor. You know, and in the case of miners in West Virginia, having reasonable demands, but the power to, shut down a coal company with a strike is just insufferable to that corporation. And when we get out in the Midwest and we're talking about farmers trying to grow crops, you're looking at the grain elevator at the end of town, and that's the only place you can sell your corn or soybeans. And so you take what they're paying, and anyone who would like to organize, like, farmers, co-ops, et cetera, strictly unwelcome. It's the same deal, where corporations don't want to share any power because basically they can dictate everything to you and I, working class, without having to have any recourse. So, you have an alcohol plant at the end of town, and now there's a new customer for your crop. So instead of selling it to Cargill or ConAgra, you can bring your crop, say it's corn, or any number of other things, because that's a choice now, into the alcohol plant, and you can say, Cargill over there isn't paying enough. I'm making sure that I go to the alcohol plant with my crop, and now they make it into alcohol and animal feed versus just sell the corn as animal feed. So giving the people who produce power, in other words, you and I, those of us out there in the public who work for a living, is what corporations can't stand. And both Daryl and I, in our different worlds, are standing up for the little guy.
Well, and as we both know, David, the farmers can produce enough crops for feed and for fuel, in spite of what we hear from those who are trying to convince people they can't.
That's a really important point. I wish you could explain that, David. How we can produce both fuel and food at the same time.
Yeah, because they create these scare tactics that the price of food's going to go through the roof if we do that. And as you know, David, that's not true.
Well, yeah, we were talking about this today at our press conference, and we were kind of scolding the press because they haven't checked their facts very well. Here they are over the last year and a half printing American Petroleum Institute press releases saying, oh, gosh, it's all about food versus fuel. It's supermarkets versus SUVs. If you turn our corn into alcohol, you're going to starve people around the world. Well, the reality over the last 3 years is that we've had the second, third, and fourth largest corn crops ever produced in the United States. And every one of those 3 years, we had literally 1.5 billion bushels or more, almost 2 billion bushels in some of those years, of surplus corn. A bushel's 56 pounds. So go ahead and crank out a 2 billion times 56, and it's an awful lot of extra corn. So how are the reporters missing the very fact that if you have a surplus of corn, which the alcohol producers aren't buying, the food companies aren't buying, it's sitting outside the silos with tarps thrown over because there's nowhere to put it, how can people be starving when they can't even sell all the corn? And, of course, all of us, students of Capitalism 101 from the time we're in elementary school, we all know that supply and demand is what sets prices in a real free market. And so a surplus of corn has to generally mean the price goes down. But not if you're the oil companies and you can speculate on the commodity market and drive the price up, making the average American pay more for food.
Let me get both of your takes on this. You first, Daryl. Are you happy with the way government, and I'm not talking about Democrats, Republicans, and libertarians, but just government in general, are you happy with what they're trying to do to help America, or are they way off base?
Explain what you mean.
Well, I mean, do you trust government? Do you think they're going to steer us down the right path? Are they trying, truly trying to get us into alternative directions?
David?
Well, you know, you and I were talking about that, Daryl, when we came out to look at your Trans Am a few months ago. And, you know, we were discussing whether or not we thought that, for instance, the change in government was going to make much difference to energy policy. And I remember you had some good comments about that, and I'd have some things to add to that.
David?
Here we go.
But go ahead. I mean, is government going to fix this for us, or do we have to do this ourselves?
Well, you know, the thing is, we have to do it ourselves because, you know, I've been back in Washington, you know, talking about the very thing that Daryl brought up, which is, you know, we've changed government, but nothing seems to be happening for alternative energy. And we all know from the campaign that this was one of the issues that divided the two candidates. One of them was saying, let's drill for more oil. The mm-hmm. other was saying, let's go ahead and work on things that replace oil. And yet, since the start of this, you know, new administration, nothing much has really changed. You know, the current so-called alternative energy bill is a no coal company left behind bill. You know, and it's like, where's the new alternatives that we were all supposed to do? So I went back to Washington to talk to the staff of Senator Feingold, who thought, you know, small-scale alcohol, like we talk about it, alcohol can be gas, makes a lot of sense for Wisconsin, his home state. And I said, okay, let's get to work on writing this bill, you know, for alcohol fuel. And they go, oh, no, sorry. You know, no big comprehensive alcohol bills can be written right now because there's no energy legislation that's going to be proposed. So you have to do it in little bits, a little amendment here, a little thing there. And I go, but wait a minute, where's the energy bill that we all expected this year? And they go, oh, forget it.
What energy bill they would
say, not right? going to happen. And it might not happen next year. So, you know, it's like I've always been saying, it's really up to us. And I let myself be kind of, you know, talked into maybe Washington would do something this time, but it's always been up to us. And luckily, when it comes to alcohol fuel, you know, we can all do this. I mean, Daryl and I are talking about building a little still for her place, you know, up in the mountains in California, because mm-hmm. she's got plants that grow right on her property that we can make into alcohol.
I remember you talked a lot about cattails as well. Do you still propose that?
Well, cattails are one thing, and I'd be happy to go back there. But Daryl's got, you know, a great plant that's growing on her property we can make into alcohol.
Cactus.
Yeah.
Cactus?
But also even any kind of waste. I mean, you were talking about you made fuel out of donuts for quite some time, right?
Well, yeah, you know, cops can only eat so many, and then they got to throw the rest away. But, you know, when we were walking around your place, you know, Daryl's got all this prickly pear, you know, growing on her property. That's the beaver tail looking cactus, you know, and
right,
it actually
yeah.
grows all over the world. And, you know, where corn will give you 250 gallons an acre, we can get like 650 to 1,000 gallons an acre, depending on what part of the world it's growing in, from prickly pear. And, you know, as we know, cactus doesn't need fertilizer. It doesn't need hardly any water. And yet land we wouldn't even consider farmland can grow something like prickly pear and outdo corn on the best farmland that we have. So cattails are another one of these great, you know, great alternative crops, or I should say they're only alternative.
And they're
because,
also a bioremediator, right?
Exactly. You know, cattails are used for cleaning up the environment. Cattails, for instance, for those of you out there who don't live where there's any water. Cattails are that marsh plant that looks like a hot dog on a stick, you know,
that's
when you
right.
see them flowering. And they have this extensive root system that has incredible suction powers. And cattail will actually take mercury out of water and evaporate it out of the water. So, you know, and it does all this other stuff in terms of breaking down estrogens, which, you know, when we say estrogens, it's the general term for things that look like female hormones. But things that are estrogenic or act like that are things like pesticides and herbicides and fire retardants and all this junk that ends up in the water, especially off of ag land.
It can bioremediate a bunch of wastewater.
Oh, yeah. It's right now the only known way to clean up the estrogens that end up in sewage. So, you know, every place has sewage. I mean, it's our biggest renewable resource is sewage, right? I mean, if we ever run out of sewage, well, we're in some real trouble. But pretty soon the government's going to say, you know, that estrogenic chemical stuff, you got to get it out of the sewage before you discharge it into the ocean or into the creeks, because it turns male fish, you know, when they're developing into female fish, and, you know, the same with, you know, crawdads, and pretty much, you know, what the estrogenic chemicals do is tell you to be a boy, I mean, be a girl. And that's not a good thing if you're a male catfish, you know. So and it's also not good for, you know, all this wildlife, but it also comes back to us, you know, it comes back eventually in the drinking water. And so we start to see women developing into puberty at much younger ages now because of the estrogen in the water and in the food, estrogenic chemicals that imitate estrogen. Alcohol production using cattails can actually clean up this pollutant in our water before it goes in. And, you know, I'm not willing to wait for the government to say, you know, we need to clean this up. We need to start doing it now. And so entrepreneurs can go ahead and start putting in cattail marshes, working with cities. You know, they can go ahead and say, okay, tell you what, you know, like we were talking with a town, Spring Grove in Illinois, and they need to deal with a failing sewage plant for the size of town. And we're saying, I'll tell you what, we'll take this old fish hatchery you have, and let's grow cattails in it, and we'll run the town sewage through it, and we'll get 7,000 gallons an acre of alcohol.
Did they understand that, or did they go, what are you talking about?
Oh, they're very interested in this. And in fact, the development down the road, which is called The Grove, is right now in the middle of putting together plans with us to build their own sewage treatment plant, and not even send their sewage to the town sewage treatment plant, because they want the cattails from their own waste products to generate profit for them in their development. So here they're going to have retail stores and, you know, residences and theaters, et cetera. And, of course, people go there and they'll leave behind the nutrients, you know. And so the Grove, instead of having this big expensive plant that would just cost them money, intend to make fuel because cattails are loaded with starch. I mean, the same thing that's in corn. So that's what we make the alcohol from. The Roman army used to make whiskey from cattails and used to be part of the salary for Roman soldiers. You know, and we talk all about alcohol made from cattails in our book, Alcohol Can Be a Gas. And I helped work on 20 years ago the first sewage treatment marshes for towns, and now we want to dedicate them for energy production as well. So it's that thought of trying to do more than one thing with the thing you're designing. That's, you know, the way nature does things, and it's the way to make the most profit. And unfortunately, sometimes we look at government only being able to look at one thing at a time. And I think small business people are used to having to squeeze every dime out of the work they do, and those are the people I think will save America's, you know, small green entrepreneurs.
Has this economy hurt this at all, David, this push?
Well, Daryl, I mean, I think you've probably been watching what's going on in the biodiesel world. What have you been seeing?
Well, unfortunately, in the biodiesel world, a lot of the big money has gone towards really unsustainable ways of making biodiesel, which is why we started the Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance, which is an organization to certify what is sustainably made biodiesel, which is community-based and sustainable feedstock rather than feedstocks that come from rainforests that have been burned down to plant palm oil plantations that have shipped overseas, boil down animals, all kinds of different unsustainable ways to make biodiesel. There's a sustainable way to make biodiesel, which is waste streams, which are different crops that grow regionally, grow, you know, in local areas that you can make from different feedstocks. And it's the same thing. It's the same thing with alcohol. You know, you want to use something that grows in your region, that grows, that keeps the nutrients in the soil.
We're going to take this quick break there. We'll come right back with you and David Bloom in just a second. Okay, here's our final segment now with Daryl Hannah and David Bloom. We're going to take your phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We've got Daryl Hannah, David Bloom. Daryl, the break got us just as we were talking about the alternative energy. But also, how do people get to your video blog? How do they find it?
It's dhlovelife.com. I make weekly video blogs, or I try to make them weekly. Every once in a while, I don't get to it weekly, but because my editor can't be available all the time. But I make weekly video blogs on sustainable solutions.
Great. dhlovelife.com.
Yeah.
Simple as that. David, if you had a blank check, could fix anything, what would it be?
If I had a blank check to fix
blank
anything.
Check, fix anything.
Gosh, I don't know. Venture capitalists ask me that all the time. I've gotten wary of that question, but let's see. Blank check to fix anything. Well, you know, I think what I would do, one of the blank checks I would do is I'd write a big check to put in a loan fund in the United States. And what we do with that loan fund is we would finance community groups to put in their own alcohol stations. In other words, we'd loan them the money to go ahead and build their own community-supported energy alcohol station, like we talk in my book, Alcohol Can Be a Gas, because it's not beyond people to afford the $100,000 to $200,000 to put in a station. If somebody could come up with the financing to make it happen, and then, you know, the working file people using that station would pay back, say, a nickel a gallon for 2 or 3 years until it's back even again. But, you know, once we set up that fund, what's really great about it is that when you put in your own station, you get a 50% tax credit on putting in that alcohol station. So, you know, if we can make that financing available to activists and churches and other kinds of collections of people that might want to set up their own neighborhood alcohol station, then, you know, clearly with that kind of tax credit, they'd be making a very good investment in their own future. And then things take care of themselves, because that collection of 500 or 1,000 people getting fuel at that station contract with local farmers to make their own fuel and supply the station. And, you know, it's like one of those little trim tab effects. You know, you make a small change and it steers the whole ship. So if people could have a place to fill up and own themselves that filling station, then how are they going to be stopped? There's no way to stop them at that point.
No, you know, that's a great idea.
But, you know, the great thing about alcohol, and it can also, it also works as a heating gas and a cooking fuel as well, right, David?
Oh, yeah. We had a great time today with that at the press conference. One of my readers sat down and pulled out a fuel oil burner, the kind of thing that much of the country uses to heat the fuel. And so, you know, Daryl and Ed Bagley were there and, you know, operating the fuel oil burner. But it wasn't running on fuel oil. It was running on alcohol that we had distilled and had in an Everclear bottle right there next to the fuel oil burner, and, you know, through a flame that was 5 or 6 feet, but you couldn't see it in the bright LA sun because there was no soot.
No,
so, you know, it was
clean.
Great Daryl was standing behind it because she had a nice black dress on, so you could kind of see the blue flame, but otherwise it would have been invisible. And so Ed's over there passing his hand through it, Ed Bagley Jr. And so it was, you know, I think an eye-opener for people to see that here was a super clean heating fuel. And, you know, you might not go to the movie if gas prices are high, but you aren't going to turn off the heat, and the oil
That's
companies
right.
know it.
That's right, and we could have a brutal winter this year. Let's take final calls here. Let's go to first-time caller Spencer, Gulfport, Mississippi. You're up with us. Go ahead, Spencer.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, all is well.
Just got off work, turned on the radio, and, you know, talking about alternative fuels, and originally from Oklahoma, and do ethanol and biodiesel there, but the ethanol guys are talking about the switchgrass. Grows big in Oklahoma, but 6 to 7 feet tall, and they say they can make alcohol out of it, and There's plenty of it.
What do you think of that, David?
Well, you know, you can technically make alcohol out of switchgrass. It's the same thing as making it out of, say, you know, corn stalks or woody materials.
Grass,
and that's what we call cellulosic
grass,
ethanol.
Or even prairie grass, which apparently switchgrass doesn't keep the nutrients in the soil, which prairie grass does. So
absolutely,
if you cut down
right
prairie
there.
Grass, you keep the nutrients in the soil, whereas if you cut down switchgrass, you leach all the nutrients out of the soil from it.
Yeah, you know, it's the same as growing corn. If you grow nothing but switchgrass, that's a monoculture. In other words, you know, you have one kind of plant drawing the same nutrients year after year, and eventually you deplete those. But as Daryl's pointing out, a prairie is made up of a lot of species of different grasses and different other plants that are also woody. So back in 2006, there was a great paper in Science Magazine that showed that not only was soil fertility maintained when you had 13 species of energy crops all growing together, but you actually, it was 16 energy crops growing together, but you actually took CO2 out of the air many, many times what was given off by the production of the alcohol and the burning of it in cars, because the way prairies work is they take carbon dioxide from the air and they make it into sugar, and then they pump it into the ground where it feeds funguses and bacteria that keep the prairie grasses alive. So we actually reverse global warming if we want to go ahead and make alcohol from mixed prairie, where that wouldn't really be true if we're just using a single crop like switchgrass.
David, what happened to the price of gasoline, where it was almost $5 a gallon during the Bush administration's last term last year, and then it started to plummet again for no reason? It's not the economy. What's going on?
Well, gosh, George, you and I busted that last year because, you know, you can look back through the records and you can see that every time there's an election, just before the election, the price of fuel plummets, and the oil companies make deals with whoever's in power. So just like every other year, last fall, the price of oil dropped like a rock, and then, you know, it was like at the lowest point on December 13th. A lot of times it goes back up on November 8th, you know, the day after the election. But this year they held off a little bit, and now look where it's come back up, from $1.30 a gallon to, you were just in California, George, we were paying $3.22 a gallon on Labor Day. And you know why are Californians paying $3.22 a gallon when in Wisconsin, when I picked up this Ford 150 from Ford Motor Company and drove it across country, I was able to fill up on alcohol in Wisconsin for $1.71 a gallon. The difference between Wisconsin and California is we have alcohol in Wisconsin, and it competes with gasoline and keeps the price down. But in California, the oil companies have mostly kept alcohol out, and we are getting the royal shaft here. So what's happening? We have the biggest gasoline market in the country. The oil companies jack up the price here, and they can depress it in the rest of the country, keeping everybody quiet, keeping everybody not complaining about the price of gas while they stick it to California. And, you know, it's not like we don't have a few bills here already. We're already looking at mega billion-dollar, you know, shortfalls in our budget, and the oil companies are sucking us dry.
Well, let's go to Tryon, Georgia. Joe, you are up with us east of the Rockies. Good morning, Joe.
Hi there, George. First-time caller, guy. I sure do enjoy your show.
Thank you, Joe.
George, what it is, I've kept this clipping for 2 years. There is a man in Tifton, Georgia. His name's J.C. Bell. He has come up with a bacteria where you take cow manure or leaves or sticks or whatever and throw it in a barrel and add this bacteria he's come up with. And in just a little bit, it turns to fuel quick. And the last I heard, the Army had a hold of it, and built him some kind of facility to make this stuff, and that's the last I heard. The man's name's J.C. Bell.
And how's he spell that last name?
B-E-L-L.
B-E-L-L.
And
okay.
He went to a conference. It says right here, hold on, just April the 15th. This was about 2006 or 7. Worldwide Energy Conference held in Arlington, Virginia. He was up there talking alongside speakers from ExxonMobil and the National Science Foundation.
Interesting. So they even gave him a platform. David, have you heard of this?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of people doing a lot of research over time, and there are things that will make fuel out of things like cellulose. In other words, the kind of stuff you're talking about, sticks and, you know, fibrous manure and things like that. The trouble
and
with bacteria,
wood chips,
though,
right, David?
Go ahead.
Mykonol from Paul Stamets.
Well, you know, that's a great way of doing it from fungus, and that's better because the trouble with bacteria is that bacteria are killed by alcohol. I mean, what do we use to disinfect a counter, right? We can just put some alcohol on a rag and, you know, rubbing alcohol, and then we can kill off the bacteria. So they're very sensitive to alcohol. Less than 1% alcohol will kill bacteria. But yeast, you know, can tolerate 13, 14, 15% alcohol, and that's why we use it to make alcohol, because we can get so much more in a tank using yeast, and then we can go ahead and then distill it easily. Now, Daryl, you were bringing up Mykonol, which is a kind of a brilliant way of using nature to get us to where we want to go instead of, you know, gene splicing bacteria, where Paul Stamets has, worked with me and on alcohol fuel and come to my workshop and discussed it with me. And so basically he's using fungi, same kind of fungi that break down wood, and using the natural enzymes that are in fungi to be able to break the cellulose that's in wood down into sugar, and then you can ferment it. So, you know, what that really promises is a way that the average man can get access to cellulose technology, where the way it's being developed right now otherwise is with fancy gene splicing labs and patented organisms. And, you know, Paul's really a pioneer in doing stuff that allows people to produce their own food, you know, clean up waste in the soil, all using fungi, and an extension of that knowledge is now being applied to energy. So we're really thrilled that he spent the time and energy to try to make a people's cellulosic alcohol.
Let's go to Huntsville, California next. Mike, you're up with us. Go ahead, Mike.
This is Huntsville, Alabama. You're getting all a bunch of Southerners calling in tonight, George.
Oh, they are, yeah.
Listen, we're very agricultural in North Alabama here. In fact, the one county over, Marshall County, which is right next to Madison where I'm at, is beginning to construct a biofuel plant for all the agriculture, I guess corn and stuff, waste that we have. But I think the problem that we have, at least, you know, with like what I'm hearing tonight, is an image problem. We in this part of the country, when we start hearing about community activists and people from the left coast, it turns us off to whatever idea they're pushing. Now, this alcohol thing's a very good idea. But the other problem is we are a petroleum-based economy, and I think it rankles the people in mid-America when we haven't done our best to try and remove the oil and stuff that we haven't started drilling for that first. If we would be, if the regulation would be taken off and be allowed to try to do that first, then I think people would be much more receptive to these other alternative fuels at the same time. But our petroleum-based economy, we haven't tried to get our own fuel out of the ground first, our own oil out of the ground first before this. And I think, at least in this part of the country, the combination of left coast movie stars pushing something and not removing our own petroleum first is gonna turn us off.
Well,
to this alternative fuel.
I got to say a couple things to you about this. First of all, what are you doing to get this country off of foreign oil? Now, you look at Daryl Hannah. She's driving her cars right now on biodiesel, and we just converted her only gasoline vehicle to run on alcohol that's made by Americans. So over 65% of the fuel we use in this country is from OPEC, it's from Arabia, it's from Africa. So I'm asking you to walk the same walk that you're criticizing this person who's clearly walking her talk. And what are you doing to get us off of foreign oil yourself?
How'd you make the conversion, David?
Well, the conversion was really pretty simple. We have these great conversion kits that are basically a small computer, and they interact with your car's computer to make your car smarter so that it can use any mixture of alcohol and gasoline. Your car is pretty smart already, and you know, this is something everybody needs to remember because, well, heck, last summer, you know, you and I, George, we increased the amount of alcohol being consumed, and I don't mean people drinking it, I meant in their cars.
Maybe that too, though, sometimes. You never know.
In Illinois, by telling them this very simple fact, which is your car's current computer can operate on 50% alcohol with no changes whatsoever. So you can buy alcohol at the pump. If you go to our website, alcohol can be a gas, we have a station locator.
I think that's a really important point. Any fuel-injected car can run on 50% alcohol without any conversion necessary.
So why don't we go ahead and do in California what we did in Illinois? Let's challenge all the listeners in California to go out, get on our website, find the local station near you. There's a lot near Sacramento. There's a one or two in L.A., you know, there's some in San Jose, there's some in Hayward and Concord. So all you people that are out, you know, in most of that part of California, what you want to do is go to that alcohol station and prove it to yourself. Put a gallon in the tank. And when your car runs just as good as it ever did, put in 2 gallons on the next tank. All of a sudden, you might notice a little more horsepower. And keep working up till you get to 50%. And in a month, you will have made a dent in the oil company profits. And, you know, nothing's better than giving American farmers your money instead of sending it overseas to transnational corporations.
Are there any large corporations, David, who have decided that their business model will be to do these kinds of plants that you're talking about tonight and to do it in a big way all around the country? Or is it just still community-based?
Well, the current plants are pretty big, and they're using corn. But where the oil companies want to go is they want to convince all of us that we need to go to cellulose because that technology is, you know, not easy to do. Now, Paul Stamets, we mentioned, is working his way around that, and that's great. But we don't need to go to cellulose. And the best way for us to keep this local and regional is for small businesses to go ahead and compete directly with oil companies. With the kind of distilleries we talk about in the book, Alcohol Can Be a Gas, people can go into business making 50 or 100 or 200,000 gallons a year and make a nice middle-class living, both on the alcohol and on the very valuable, primarily food byproducts that you get out of the alcohol plant. So, you know, you've been bugging me for over a year, George, and so have other people saying, well, come on, someone's got to make it easy for these entrepreneurs to, you know, produce
to get it done.
Distilleries, and we're going to do it.
Well, let's see this happen, David, because it could revolutionize.
Well, we just founded a month ago Bloom Distillation, and we're just cranking up that company now. We expect in less than a year we'll be putting out stills for small eco-entrepreneurs.
Keep pushing ahead. And Daryl, thanks for being on the program. And good luck with your career and everything that you're working on.
Thank you.
That's Daryl Hannah, David Bloom, of course. Websites linked up at coasttocoastam.com right now. On our next program, it's going to be a major alternative health show before we get into some incredibly supernatural and paranormal stories for the rest of the week, including underground bases and tunnels, the alien hunter, and then we're back to open lines and the Twilight Zone 50th anniversary. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lone Hood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.